Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Today's Thursday. It's July 17th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Fascinating day today, especially with our guest, John Cater. John Cater is the owner of Top Class Limousine. We're going to find out about the business that he opened years and years ago, and at the same time find out how the business functions in a sense, because the business has ups and downs in a sense that in certain times of the year you've got the prom season, other times of the year you've got the wedding season, and in other times of the year you just have the businesswoman business that probably goes throughout the year. And then there are other special occasions as well. So it's a fascinating business. And because it's a business where you interact with people, it's got to be not only interesting, sometimes funny, sometimes sad, but I just love the whole aspect of being with people, learning from them good and learning from them bad. And it's just a fun time. It looks like we've got a caller. Maybe that's Mr. Cater. We'll find out in a moment. Bear with me a second. Good morning, caller. Thanks for waiting.
How you doing, Ezzy? Good morning. It's John.
Oh, good morning. John Cater, the person we were waiting for. You're the man of the hour, that's for sure. How are you doing?
Not bad. You know, hanging in there. Another usual morning.
Well, you know, that means you must be on a lot of radio shows, but that's okay. You know, I'm honored that you're on.
I only like the interesting thing.
Thank you. Well, you know, that's always nice to hear. Well, John, how many years have you been in business with your limousine service, with Top Class Limousine?
This marks our 26th year.
Oh, my God. And you don't look like you're more than 30.
Well, I wish I could,
you've got
so
a very
I could feel that way.
Oh, well, that's another story. That's another show. Then we could share notes. Well, 26 years. And could I ask you, what was the reason that you decided to open up in Yonkers 26 years ago?
You know, Yonkers, my family immigrated there in 1964. We went to schools here. We grew up in the southwest quarter of Yonkers. And, you know, you have all your family here. It's hard to go out of Yonkers into different areas and to try to, you know, get familiar with the localities of operating business and so forth. So, you know, we just decided to stay into Yonkers.
Well, I think that's so interesting that you say that, because there is something special about Yonkers, which is only solidified much more so when family is here with you, so that it grabs onto you and you just hang on. And it is definitely a ride, so I'm sure in 26 years you've learned a great deal. Well, so the business has been based here in Yonkers, and how was the scene 26 years ago as compared to today? There must be a tremendous difference, not only in the types of cars that you offer, but at the same time at the businesses that you serve. Or is there a lot of similarity between the past of 26 years ago and the present?
You know, Eddie, that's a real good question, because it has changed drastically. Limousines today are, nobody would have thought 20 years ago that you would see what you see today on the road. And also the type of services that we get today's customers requesting. We never had that 20, 25 years ago. You know, Sweet 16s, Sweet 15s are becoming super popular. We're starting to get customers surprising their wives at the hospital when they get a new birth. When they give new birth, they call it a baby's first ride home. We never did that like 25 years ago. It was almost unheard of. You're getting a lot of...
I didn't have a car 25 or 26 years ago.
You're getting a lot of a lot of requests that we never got before, you know, even like with bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs, you know,
yeah.
All the kids get picked up before they go to the synagogue to have their ceremony done. So there's a lot of new stuff that came in and a lot of stuff that's old that, you know, we don't do too much anymore. And, you know, as far as the limousines goes, the limousines have changed. You know, 25 years ago, the average size of a limousine was 6 to 8 passengers, which is about 24 feet long, approximate.
Mm-hmm.
And today you got limousines that are holding 14 to 22, which are about 35 to 36 feet long. And, you know, you never would think that would have happened. So there have been major, major changes, and, you know, one of the things that I do that I always, like I told you at the last radio show, is every day I want to learn something because you never know it all. You got to read up on the industry events. We have a couple of publications that are geared towards limousine operators, and there's always constant new stuff coming in. You know, now the last 2-3 years they got these limousines now with jet doors, that, you know, it looks like a Goldwing style type limo that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there are drastic changes. A lot of good ones and a lot of bad ones.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there are fads in the automotive end of it as well. And but do the diehards like the Rolls Royces I guess the Cadillacs, do they stay? Popular? As before, or does that change as well?
Cadillac is, in my opinion, I think it's lost its market share. In the early 90s, late 80s, they kept on changing the style of the car and the chassis of the car, and it just, to me, it was a failure. You don't really see too many of them anymore besides the Escalade itself. But the old Fleetwood Brougham, the old Sedan DeVille, has lost its share. The town car took over the last 20 years, and now the town car has been discontinued. Lincoln replaced it with a MKT and an MKZ, which, in my opinion, we don't carry them. They're, you know, they just don't look right. They don't have the look and feel of a big style sedan. We're sticking with the Chrysler 300 as far as our basic stretch goes. It's a real sporty, sleeky looking car, and it's a lot more affordable. The Lincoln Town Car used to be about $25,000 to $28,000 many years ago, and the Cadillac was always like $3,000 more. And you can get today; they're like $40,000 to $45,000 for just a sedan, not a limousine. Wow. Where you can get the Chrysler 300 for about $31,000. So those are the changes that we never would think that Chrysler would take a part of the livery market. And
they've got a beautiful car. The 300 is absolutely stunning. And from the first that I saw it when it was inaugurated, I don't know how many years ago that was, but it's probably close to what is it, 5, 7, 8 years ago?
I think it was about 7 years. The first 300 came out in 05, 06. And they didn't really develop that car for the luxury market. What happened is in those time frames, Lincoln was going through changes with their MKT and MKZ coming out years later, and Cadillac was changing. So, like, Chrysler, they have, like, the perfect storm for Chrysler 300 to come out. Now, 6 months ago, I just heard they're starting to make it a 6-inch stretch. In other words, it's still considered a 4-door sedan, but the doors are extended 8 inches, actually, not 6, 8 inches longer, which gives the client, a typical VIP CEO, extra legroom and easy access going in and out of the vehicle. But Chrysler is definitely going to be a major player for years to come.
Absolutely. Very fascinating what's happening on the instruments that you need, which are the vehicles. But has the Rolls-Royce still kept its panache? Is it something special to be riding around in a Rolls-Royce on a special occasion for your wife and for your mother and for your in-laws and just for anything that you do? It's got to be a very unique moment to step out of a Rolls-Royce, step into a Rolls-Royce as well.
The Rolls-Royce, in my opinion, I probably think it's the number one looked sought after car for weddings.
Yeah.
They're timeless. They're classics. They don't change. We have some models that range from 1958 up to 1963. And I've had these cars for a long time, and I look at pictures, and they don't ever change. They don't get older. They just get more classier. The antique look stays into it, as opposed to new style Rolls-Royces, which is the Phantom. The Phantom is first came out in 2004. And, you know, 10, 15 years, this car is going to look old. It's not going to look classic. It's not going to look antique-ish. It's not going to have the nostalgic look that these old antiques do. And that's why those cars from the 50s and 60s will always probably be a number one requested car for a date like a wedding.
Very interesting that you said that. I didn't think about it, but as you were speaking about the latest models like the Phantom, I understand and I recognize what you're saying, and I believe you're right. But I needed for someone else to express that because it didn't dawn on me. But what an interesting view of the vehicle, and I guess the thing that makes us want to go for those cars. And I know that you've had a fleet of them. I've seen you driving around in Yonkers every now and then in the Rolls. It's really terrific. And you can't mistake it. You just can't mistake it. You know it's a Rolls, and then quite often it's John Cater who's driving. I think it's terrific.
If I'm driving it, it's because I'm probably test driving it. You know, we do a lot of in-house maintenance. So sometimes I go around the block, take a ride down by the waterfront. You know, it's sometimes with those cars, you really need to ride them every now and then to get a feel of how the engine is. You know, the Rolls Royce, they say back in England, they're very, very sensitive cars when the weather changes. You know, sometimes we don't do it anymore, but when you pressure clean the engine, sometimes you get like a little misfire, a little running rough. Sometimes it runs too strong, too weak. And sometimes you got to take them out for a ride and blow them out. You get the seals in the engines. They start to get dry rot if you don't use them enough. So, you know, the English cars in general have to be taken out. You can't have them garaged for a long period of time.
Mm. That was always the big issue with the Jaguars.
Exactly.
And I don't know if they've ever fixed it. I never purchased the Jag, and so.
They got their own story.
But I wanted to ask exactly. I wanted to ask you about the business itself. Like for example, there are seasons that you have in the business. Of course, it's a standard, constant. You know, driving business people. Making appointments for hospitals that constantly go on or going to shopping sprees and just constantly catering for people's different needs. But right now you just finished the prom season, didn't you?
Yeah, June 26th was our last prom night.
And so how does that change the demeanor not only of your client, but also the demeanor of the driver? And are there special responsibilities that you as the owner of, the company, do you have to look out for certain issues? Are there certain concerns that you worry about, that parents worry about?
Well, you know, proms are very special events. As you know, it's the night that the seniors graduate, and it's probably something that most will never forget. And in that role becomes the responsibility of a driver to make sure that, you know, they're behaving and doing what's proper. And that becomes an issue because as in all celebratory events, there's always alcohol that plays a role. And I'm proud to say this year that we've seen either a less involvement with alcohol or maybe the children, maybe the seniors are starting to get more serious about what role it plays. I didn't get the same amount of calls I normally get prom season. You know, we usually get 3 to 5 calls from chauffeurs after midnight at night. stating that, you know, they found alcohol or they believe that, you know, somebody's intoxicated. And I didn't get not one this year, and I was, like, really happy. And, you know, I sit on the Taxi Limousine Commission, and we had our meeting a couple weeks ago, and even the police stated that when they checked their vehicles that come in the beginning of the prom venue, that they also seen a decrease in confiscated liquor. And it's good. Maybe it's working. Maybe parents are getting, you know, taking stuff serious, because, you know, every year you hear stories of kids getting rushed to the hospital, you know, alcohol poisoning and so forth. And, you know, we have a prom pledge. As a member of the Westchester County Taxi Limousine Commission, the county has enacted all licensed base stations to have a prom pledge, have the every child, every kid, every senior in the limousine must sign this, and their parents see it, which is basically a pledge stating that you're going to do the right thing and you're not going to drink and you're going to, you know, make sure that you enjoy your evening. That played a lot of role, because it really puts the kids in a serious predicament if they break it, because it gives us the right to actually cancel the job. And the parents know that the money is not refundable. So they're, you know, it's working. You know, the county's doing the right thing to ensure prom safety.
That's actually wonderful. And so as you ratchet up, you know, and focus on different times of the year, you also have your wedding season. Are you going into that now? Is this the height of weddings?
I call it the crazy season, because prom season starts typically first 1 week, 2 weeks of May, depending on the schools, because every year it changes. Sometimes the first week, sometimes the second week. So at the same time, you got Friday and Saturday weekend weddings that start typically the last week of April and the beginning of May. So you don't get no transitional period to break in and get used to the, you know, the hustle and the bustle. So it's crazy. You know, May and June, it's, you know, minimum 12, 14-hour days. I don't get home till 8, 9 o'clock at night, because, you know, we're doing maintenance on the cars, and, you know, we're dealing with reservations that, you know, when people finish work, they come home to the place to look at their cars. And then the end of prom season comes in, you're still going crazy with the wedding season, which is on the weekends. And the wedding season will continue probably till November. I mean, you talk about changes. End of September, October was typically the end of the wedding season. But, you know, we got a lot of October weddings and November weddings the last 2 years that I never really was seeing. I mean, I'm seeing more and more weddings happening closer to the end of the year. It could be because the weather is still great. It could be that the catering halls are more lenient to give better deals on packages. It could be a lot of things, but, you know, we're going to be busy now until at least November, and then we'll transition December into Christmas parties for corporate and so forth, and sightseeing down in Manhattan, Radio City, the FAO toy store. Macy's.
Yeah.
You get a lot of that stuff in December. And then, you know, comes January where everything just comes, it crashes. There's no movement. You know, the cars are idling. And even then it's still busy, because then we do maintenance. You know, maintenance is a key factor in our operations. We're constantly always on top of our vehicles, making sure that they're in the best running condition possible.
Very fascinating. We're going to take a little bit of a break. We'll be back with John Cater after a commercial break, and then we'll learn a lot more about the limousine business and his business, and we'll see what's going on. So bear with me a moment.
Hey, you a judge?
Sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge?
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show?
Cabot rules.
The Stanley Cup?
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and Best Cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain Big Cheese Company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do.
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Mmm, hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
And I get to wear a yellow lab coat.
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot Cheddar.
Check.
Well, we are back, and this is Westchester on the Level, and we're speaking with John Cater. He's the owner of Top Class Limousine. And you could find him at topclasslimo.com if you want to look a little further. There's a lot of information about all the different cars and vehicles that they have, and some pictures of different types of events. So it's a good thing. And then on top of that, I guess today everyone goes on the internet first rather than to make phone calls. So again, topclasslimo.com. But if you want to make a phone call, call them up at 914-423-5466. So 914-423-5466, and you'll be able to learn a great deal more. I wanted to ask you, John Cater, not only does it mention here that you are a gentleman, and I have to agree with even that, so there was nothing that I saw that was out of place on your website, but you are a gentleman. How did you come up with a name like Top Class?
You know, coming up with names is always hard, and sometimes can be very easy, depending on what the product or what you're trying to do. But I don't know. There was a company way back then in the mid '80s, First Class. There was a company which I liked also the name, and there was a company in the Bronx that was called High Class. But when I first started, we were doing a lot of. My vision was not airports. My vision was not really so much corporate. My vision was nightly entertainment. There was a market for that back then. For the companies that I used to work, that's what I kind of liked, and that's what kind of intrigued me to move that direction. And I wanted the name of the company to reflect on what you would be getting. I mean, when you think of names, a lot of the names – automatically give you an idea of what to expect from that type of a vendor or that type of service. So I said to myself, I don't want these other guys to think I'm trying to copy them, First Class. So I said to myself, or High Class, or Best. I said, you know what? How about like something on top of the world, where you're on top of everybody, where you beat everybody?
Yeah.
I said, how about Top Class? And,
good idea.
It was really good because... You know, everybody loved the name, you know, nothing wrong with it. And it's something that I really took pride in because I was always hands-on. Even like 26 years later, we just had a DOT inspection yesterday on the fleet, and the inspector was a new guy, and he says, I introduced myself to him. He didn't know I was the owner, and he sees me, you know, watching him do the inspection on it. It's a very rigorous inspection New York State DOT does, by the way. And he didn't know I was the owner till the end. He says, and what's your position in the company? I says, well, I actually own it. He says, really? He says, I don't see owners that watch what goes on in the DOT inspection. I says, well, you know what? I'm a hands-on guy, maybe too much hands-on, and I like to see the process, and I like to know what, you know, what the inspectors are looking for. So the inspector was kind of happy that he actually seen a principal involved in the inspection process. But getting back to the name, I wanted to do something, you know, call it a name that would be recognized as best in its service, and Top Class was good because more or less about the same time, a popular nightclub on Yonkers Avenue opened up by the name of Top Brass, and Top Brass was a very well-established nightclub, very uppity, very upscale type of crowd. And we actually ended up, you know, having a contract with them, bringing in entertainers there on the weekends. So it was Top Class Nightclub, and, you know, the provider for limousine service was Top Class. And it was a good start, because a lot of my friends today keep talking to me about that nightclub. But I love the name Top Class, and, you know, it is what we strive in every reservation.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that you brought back a little bit of history, especially Top Brass. I had not heard of it because I wasn't around. I've only been covering Yonkers about, I think it's now it's about 14 years, 13 years, something like that. So I'd not heard of it, but, you know, that would be a phenomenal place if we could resurrect a, you know, a club, because there are 200,000 people in Yonkers. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on, like Empire City and the casino and the racetrack. We certainly could use a really, you know, a really terrific nightclub. Why not? And we had so many people in the past who were, you know, top talent. And let's face it, Westchester is the home of a lot of people who are most notable in New York City, but they come home at night, and would be nice to be able to pull them together somewhere in Yonkers. So that's a great idea. Maybe, well, that's one of the problems we have, is we don't really talk to one another, not you and I, but the city doesn't always talk to one another. And I think there's a lot of history that gets lost, and we could emulate some of that stuff. Very interesting. So I wonder who the investor is going to be.
We're going
to have to find somebody.
Definitely it's something that's needed in Yonkers. We really don't have a nice upscale nightclub. Waterfront, in my opinion, would be a great idea.
Absolutely. What a great idea. What a great concept. And you picked the venue as well. Well, it's something to think about. Speaking of Yonkers, how, when you work so many hours and you're hands-on, how is it that you can also engage in the time that's necessary to be on the planning board? How do you do that?
You know,
does your wife actually know who you are anymore?
No, she knows very well. One of the good things about today versus 26 years ago is that we have this computer. And it's very easy to buy it. You know, they're not like they were years ago, a couple of thousand dollars. So, you know, my typical morning starts 7:30 in the morning, more or less. And, you know, I do computer work from the home. So I can log into the office, do a lot of email follow-ups and check driver schedule and, you know, do a lot of things from my home. So, you know, my wife and my kids do see me in the mornings before I head out. And, you know, we got this new tool today called a BlackBerry iPhone, which even if you're not in the office, you can get your emails sent. So that's how the business has changed a lot. I could do a lot of things home. So, yeah, my family does see me in the mornings, but at nighttime they see me usually on the later side. The planning board is really, really, it's something that I didn't think I would like it as much as I do, because it gives you a firsthand in-depth of what a project is supposed to be envisioned, which I think is, it's cool because, you know, you're looking at plans, you're looking at things, how they're going to reflect in the area where it's going to be proposed at. And, you know, I'm very vocal to a point, and I express my opinions. And one of the things as a planning board member is that you got to make your decisions based on the people that are there. Sometimes you get opposition, sometimes you get opponents, sometimes you get proponents, and I take that very seriously, and I look at the project, if it blends in right, if it looks right, because, you know, we're supposed to make these type of decisions based on the betterment of the city of Yonkers, not on, you know, personal, what your personal opinion is. So the planning board, we meet once a month, and we have discussions through emails on certain projects. You can't have more. You can't have too much discussions because then it becomes almost like a meeting. So we always keep our discussions based on one, two members, three members max. After that, becomes a quorum. But it's really nice. It's the board is it's a well diversified board. Our director Lee Elman has been with the city for a long, long time. He knows the planning board in and out. He knows the players. He knows the codes. He knows, you know, he's a very intelligent person. And our chairman, Roman Kazicki, has been there, I think, for a long time. And it runs very well. And I'm happy to be part of it. I'm happy that the mayor appointed me to it.
Well, it's definitely an honor to serve, and certainly to serve the city where you've made your investment in business as well as in your home. And so it's great that you're willing to make that time. I don't know if there are other communities where there's so much connection, I think, to business and family and government. There's a tremendous amount of investment. I've always I've been in awe, actually, in looking at people in Yonkers and see how much of their time and effort is given. And there's no remuneration. There's no money to be made out of this. A lot of work, a lot of study, a lot of, integrity and taking on the challenge. It's nice to see. It shows that, that there's a cohesiveness about the city and an interest in getting things done and done right. So that's always good. Well, we're speaking to John Cater of Top Class Limo and the Top Class Limousine. It's topclasslimo.com and Top Class Limousine. What do you see into the future as you evolve your business? I want to ask you also about the other stuff besides the proms and the weddings and the special occasions and the bar mitzvahs and the bat mitzvahs and the 15 sweet 15 and sweet 16 parties and all that stuff. What about corporate business? Do you do that as well?
We do it, but it's not really our market. Our type of vehicles are not really typically used on corporate events. However, okay. We do have black stretches that are used for bigger party transportation for corporate events. But we're really not a corporate company. I tried to get into it in early 2003, 2004, and I invested a lot of time, marketing towards corporate companies. And you can't be a wedding specialist. We're known as a wedding specialist. When I started my company, we were known for weddings and night outs and proms. And
yeah.
You can't really take on too many things and try to be good at all of them at one time. And I refer this to as a heart specialist. A heart specialist doesn't do, anything else except, cardio work. And same thing with a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
And I like to look at myself as a wedding specialist. And I tried to do it from 2003, 2004, and 2 years later I said, this is not just working. We're spending a lot of money on marketing. With corporate companies, they want you to have a minimum of 10 to 15 town cars in your fleet, which I wasn't ready to make that investment. I would make it if somebody signed a contract with me, but, corporate companies don't really sign contracts with you without you having the material first. And they always want a couple of cars on standby within an hour's notice, 2 hours notice. It's a really difficult field for corporate. I mean, I don't envy it. I feel sorry for the guys that do it. Today, the average job to an airport is $125. You're on the road for about 2 hours, more or less. Gas is expensive. Tolls gone up. I mean, if you're not doing an airport pick up or drop off simultaneously, it's hard to really make money in that market. You have to have, if you're dropping a customer at one of the airports, hopefully you got another one on the rebound coming up. If you're coming up deadhead, which is known as an empty car, you lost money. So,
yeah.
Going back to corporate, we stopped marketing for it in 2006, but we have a couple of accounts that use us for, they're corporate accounts, but they use us for more nightly work. They take clients to restaurants. They do dinner meetings and stuff like that. So we do corporate, but not the typical corporate that people think airports. So
yeah.
It's just not our market. I want to focus on weddings. I want to focus on proms
yeah.
and be number one at that.
Well, the way you explained it makes so much sense to me. Because the investment to go beyond your expertise is so great, and it just doesn't make sense. You're not going to be able to use the Rolls Royce. It just wouldn't even be appropriate to drive someone to a corporate meeting in a Rolls.
It
just doesn't
not.
Make sense at all. So very interesting, but it's a great way of looking at the business, and very lucid to me, your thinking process. Very interesting. And have you found that when you do reading in the publications that serve your type of business, are there new things on the forefront? Are things happening? Are you driving a lot of people, for example, from Westchester County to Manhattan for a Broadway show or a dinner date as well? Is that part of what you do?
You know, 2014 seems to be a great start. I have seen an increase with a lot of Westchesterites starting to go back. I've always been told that Manhattan's always been busy. And I always tell my chauffeurs, you know, where do you see limousines from? What areas? You could tell by the license plates if they're from Jersey or Connecticut, or if they have a stamp on the front window, if they're actually local Manhattan-based operators. And then I ask my drivers, do they look like typical New Yorkers, or are they actually foreigners? And my drivers looked at me and says, man, John is asking this question. What's he trying to get to? And I was trying to tell him, I says, these are probably foreigners that are spending money because the euro is so great the last couple of years in the States that they're taking advantage of it. And it's true. A couple of years ago, Manhattan was busy, and it still is, but I'm starting to see now more Westchesterites going down to Manhattan and seeing the typical play. I didn't see that too much the last couple of years.
Right.
They probably took a bus, train, or they actually drove, but which is a good sign because our reservations are computer based, and every month or so I like to look to see how many dinner runs. We break down our reservations actually by dinner runs, prom runs, wedding runs, and so forth. So we could categorize everything and get a better idea. And I compared it to 2013, and I do see a little jump, which is, thank God, giving me a good reason to like think that hopefully we are in recovery mode. And the fact Westchester using limousines to do these things that they didn't do the last 4 years is reassuring.
Absolutely. And what about like the Westchester Broadway Theater? They happen to be one of our sponsors as well, but I get the impression that more and more people are also going there because it's more local.
You know, I never really went there too much. I mean, I've been there personally a few times. I think it's a great place. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
It's like $60 with a show and a dinner, and the food is great. Me and my wife really have a good time every time we do go, which is usually like once, twice a year. But I just got a solicitation for them last week, and I told my wife, why don't we think about going? But I got to discuss it with her after I hang up with you. But I don't get too much going there, but we do have a few that go there.
Okay.
I think they want to go downtown. They want to see Times Square. They want to see the Broadway Theater District.
Well, it's different, certainly, going down to New York. But I think the whole idea is that too often when you went into New York, you were part of the Bridge and Tunnel crowd, you would end up having an early dinner, and then you would see the show, and then you would run to get to a train or some other mode to go home. And that made for a very long, long day. And it was early. It was like kept on pushing everything. I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen a show and maybe even stayed over after the show in the city and then go home. So it depends on your clock. But there were just a lot more people that used to go down to New York, catch a Broadway show and dinner, and then go home in Westchester County. So I'm glad, like you said, also that it's coming back. Are there other destinations that people tend to travel to that you see is a growing trend for your business? Do people have weddings in Connecticut and in upstate New York and in New York City and in New Jersey? Is what's happening with the wedding crowd?
The wedding crowd, we do go to Connecticut. Not much. There's, usually clients that are having their wedding in Connecticut will typically use a service in that area. However, from time to time, they call us because that service doesn't have the limousines that we carry. So we go up to Connecticut, not too far up. I forgot the name of that catering hall. What the hell's the name of it? In Greenwich, actually. I forgot, but there is a couple of popular venues up there. But I think the Bronx has a couple of nice catering halls. But I think Westchester itself, you know, probably New Rochelle, you know, catering halls.
Yeah.
Probably the best venues, you know. You got Surf Club, which is actually underneath new ownership. They've just remodeled the place and put some advertising dollars back in their budget, and it looks nice. You got Fountainhead, which we did a wedding last week, and the couple were telling the driver that it was superb. Westchester, I think, is probably the best in general. Because of location.
Right.
It's central, you're on the water. You know, you go to Manhattan, there's not too many catering halls that are affordable that you can get the view of the water.
Absolutely.
New Jersey is a popular one now, the Venetian. About 30 minutes over the bridge. But I told my daughter, pick something local. We're not making, you know, our guests travel an hour away.
I just like the fact that you had brought up New Rochelle. I'd forgotten all about it, to be honest with you, but you're right.
New Rochelle has been there. You know, those catering halls have been there from 100 years at least. I think the first catering hall over there was the Davenport, and it's still owned and operated, I believe, by the Rossi family.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, you know, there's some also good things that might happen as well as in Yonkers, I guess, as we're supposedly going to be building a few hotels, and hopefully they'll be large enough to also serve a wedding crowd, because I don't think we have really much in Yonkers that would hold like 300 or 400 people. That would be hard to serve.
Royal Regency.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
They just went
very good.
They went a multi-million-dollar renovation just a few years ago. They actually have a catering.
Yeah.
I think they hold 600 people, believe it or not.
Really, I had no idea.
You need to take a ride over there. Check it out. It's nice. It's they have a two rooms. I forgot the name of the rooms. One holds 200 and change, and the other one's 600. Believe it or not.
My goodness. Well,
yeah.
Well, there are people who can afford that. My goodness. That's terrific. Wow. Are you in the buying mood as far as cars are concerned? Are you buying any more vehicles to your fleet? You know, what do you have to go through when you get a Stretch, for example? Those are not standard vehicles, right? You have to buy the vehicle first, and then you have to work with a particular company for the Stretch process?
Well, there's two ways to do it. You can actually buy a vehicle already done by a coach builder, or you can actually buy a sedan, and then you pick your choice of coach builder to build it. And the good thing with that is that you can get the vehicle custom built to your color, your specs, where you want the TVs placed and so forth. It's more of a customized built car. It costs you a couple of $1,000s more, but, you know, if you're not in a rush, that's the way to go. However, the financing on that is a little bit more typical, harder to get, because, you know, when the banks know that you're buying a sedan and you're going to stretch it out, they want to make sure that, you know, that the coach builder that you choose is going to build it properly and not go belly up. And they want to make sure that you can afford it. The payments on it, being that it's going to typically be a higher-end vehicle. When you buy a sedan and you're going to get a custom built, chances are, you know, it's going to be $5,000, $10,000 more than what a base model already done up would cost. So getting back to your question, as far as buying, I reevaluated my ideas about buying. And, you know, my mother and my father always tell me, you know, do you need to buy that car? Do you think it's going to make money? And, you know, me, typical know-it-all, would say, what do these old people know? They don't know nothing. And, you know, we went through the depression the last 5 years, 2008, 2007. I got really a wide awakening on it financially wise. Probably the toughest years in my 26. I've survived slow seasons. I've survived the droughts, but the last 4 years were really, really difficult because right before the market tanked, we had just bought a fleet of 6-7 vehicles. And my overhead was probably the highest ever in my 26 years. And that's because we really thought 2004, 2005, we've seen a lot of growth. And, you know, we're out of the storm. Thank God my cars are paid for. I don't buy the way I used to buy. I buy if I only need it. I don't buy it now because I want it. I buy it if I need it to replace an older vehicle. And typically our vehicles last 5 to 8 years, but I was getting rid of them after 3-4 years just, you know, because you want new. You want new, and new doesn't mean you're going to make more money. As a matter of fact, me and some of my friendly competitors, you know, we're sitting down and having a couple of drinks. You know, we talk about other companies that have older vehicles, and we're laughing at them, saying, how the hell they stay in business? And now, years later, we say, they stay in business because they got no monthly note. They don't owe the banks any money. Their cars are free and clear. They can afford to go out 20% less than us because they have no car payment. And it's something that I've learned to accept. And, you know, our cars are, you know, maintained well. And, you know, the paint jobs on them look nice and clean and shiny. And the cars are about 6 years old, and they got only 40,000 miles on them, which is very, very minimal mileage for a six-year limousine. So I'm not buying the way I am. If I do buy, it might be 1-2 vehicles a year, and that'll be every 2 to 3 years as opposed to every year, you know, 3-4 vehicles.
Right.
So we're definitely, you know, re-strategized financing cars and when to replace them and so forth. So this year we bought a 2014 Chrysler 300, 10-passenger. It's a really, really cool car. It's probably one of the first ones out. It doesn't have any buttons in it. It's all touch screen. So, you know, the typical limousine would have knobs or rocker switches, and that's how you would activate and deactivate sound systems, TVs, the disco lights, fiber optic lighting, and so forth. So this is a flat screen, and you just touch everything you want. It's really
that's
cool
beautiful.
Because it looks state of, you know, it's the state-of-the-art stuff now. And today's, you know, cars come with built-in MP3s. You could store up to like 200 DVDs in there. You can download from YouTube. Believe it or not, you have internet access in the limousine. And you could download videos in the limousine and watch them. That's with this new car that we got this year. This 2014. So
very
we're in the process of negotiating for next year, 2015 Chrysler 300 stretches for next year. And that's the forecast so far. Just one car for this year and possibly two for next year.
Amazing, amazing. I want you to hang in there for a moment. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back. And I wanted to ask you if there were special colors that people were vying for. Do they want that cream-colored Rolls-Royce, or are they looking for a pink-colored car? Are they looking for black? Are they looking for white? Are they looking for blue or red? Or who knows, a Union Jack. I mean, what is it that people are looking for? And we'll be right back after we'll find out about Christmas in July. Hope you'll enjoy it.
Christmas is coming early this year at the Westchester Broadway Theater. As we welcome back Christmas in July, our biggest gift certificate sales event ever. For the entire month of July, for every WBT gift certificate you buy at the regular low price, you'll get a second one for half off. That's right, half off. Each one is good for two people and includes a delicious served dinner before the show with a choice of 6 entrees, including prime ribs of beef. But this year, it's better than ever because you can use them for great shows like The Wizard of Oz, South Pacific, West Side Story, Showboat, or any of the 10 great upcoming Broadway musicals between now and January 31st of 2016. You can also choose from dozens of exciting concerts and specials. They make great gifts for everyone, or just treat yourself, because now during July, for every one you buy, you'll get a second one for half off. Stop in at the theater box office or order them by phone at 914-592-2222. You can even order them online at BroadwayTheater.com. Christmas in July, our biggest gift certificate sales event of the year. But it's only during July and only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well,
they need to put the tire back in the car, Samad.
Oh, well, we're back, and what we're going to do is we're going to be we're going to talk to John Cater, the owner of Top Class Limousine, and you could find him at topclasslimo.com or simply give him a call at 914-423-5466. So the number again is 914-423-5466. And you can find him online at topclasslimo.com. And certainly their specialty, weddings, sweet 16, sweet 15, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, proms, which is basically over at this moment, and just a lot of different things that you'd be interested to do. If they've got vehicles and they've got the staff, and you know, that might be the way to go. I remember using their service a while back, and I loved it. John, I wonder if you're back. And I wanted to ask you if people are specifically looking for special colored cars. Is there like something like a hot, chartreuse green that's hitting the scene, or what's going on with colors?
When I started, they had grays, silvers, blue, and you know, typical black and white colors. But I'm seeing more and more straight white and black requests. I don't know when's the last time I got somebody asking me for a pink car or a purple car. Even though we toyed around with the idea of it, but I just didn't think it was the right thing to do. We do have a car in our fleet. It's a two-tone special edition car. It's a Chrysler 300. It's a Brandywine color. It's like a deep maroon burgundy. They call it Brandywine, I guess, just to make it sound really nice. And it's over ebony black. And we do get some customers for that type of a car because it's still considered a dark-colored car. But I don't get no customers requesting any funny-colored cars, no.
I was wondering, you know, I've heard so many times that people – put like signs on their cars. It's some sort of computer-based ability to put on like a, I guess it must be like a sort of a vinyl on a car, so that they could, I guess, conceivably change the color and stuff like that. And I was wondering if that's being incorporated in a lot of places nowadays, you know, where they could paint signs on the car and stuff like that, or is that like out of this world, a little crazy?
I see limousines with a wrap, you know, a marketing. But I haven't seen what you said. I've seen screens, the TV screens, put advertisers' messages on it. They have a new software for that, where the limousine service can provide local. If you're based out of Yonkers, you could start, you know, advertising local guys in Yonkers vendors. But I haven't seen it, but I heard that it's out there.
You know, I'm looking on your website, and I fell in love with your 1964 Rolls Princess. God, is she gorgeous.
Is that the silver black one?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Stunning.
Yeah,
stunning. Go ahead.
She's the only one I have in my fleet. We actually have another one in process. It's being restored. It's going to be solid black, that one. But the silver and black, yeah, it's a nice combination. It's a popular car with weddings also. That's why we decided to do a black Rolls Royce, because a lot of brides got that formal look. You know, typically, a wedding, and this is from a professional standpoint, not from a personal standpoint, weddings, only the bride and groom is supposed to be in a white car. And anything else could be black, blue, silver, dark formal color. Black is popular today. And they refer to black as a funeral car. And I try to tell them, I says, don't think of it that way. That's old world mentality. And they look at me like I'm trying to sell them something. And I says, look, next time you're down in Manhattan, look at the Plaza, look at the Waldorf, look at all the hottest venues. Superstars don't come out of white
cars.
They come out of black.
Yeah.
They will not be caught in a white car. And then the bride will say, well, you know, you're right. I says, yes. I says, white means bride. You got a white dress, purity, and you're supposed to stand out. And black means formal. Your wedding attire, your wedding party, rather. And they're supposed to be in a different color. But you get this newer generation today, sometimes they're just so stubborn, and you know what? I give them whatever they want, but as an owner, I have to educate them and tell them what's etiquette. And what's etiquette is that, really, you're not supposed to have three cars the same color. You know, that's just, I mean, when I got married, my wife and me were in a white car, and the bridal party, the girls were in a burgundy car, and the guys were in a black car. I mean, you know, that's all I had back then, but it still was cool because it was different colors. And
really,
you know,
nice.
Yeah, that's what only the bride's supposed to be in white.
Got to ask you about one other thing, because, you know, walking around in Yonkers, I've seen you've got a trolley, don't you?
We've diversified into buses, yeah. Trolley, it's a lot less cheaper than a bus, and it's different. And my idea with that was years ago to try to sell it to downtown Main Street vendors.
Right.
Actually use it where we can do like general weekends, where it does a loop, you know, goes down Getty Square, around Warburton, down through Main Street, through Larkin Plaza, down by X2O, like they do in New Orleans, like they do in West Palm Beach, like they do in Vegas. But, you know, it's hard to get people to invest in that. So I said to myself, you know what, let me try it and let me just market it towards weddings. And see how it does with weddings. So we bought a green one 2 years ago, and it's doing great for the bridal parties. They love to go in there. It's got that nostalgic look to it. Nobody has it in Westchester. And we just acquired a new one, a new white one, a 30-passenger white trolley, and that's made for the bride and groom and her wedding party to be in. So trolleys are taking off. It's different, and there's a lot of dates where we're overbooked. We don't have them.
Well, I just love them because I haven't seen the white one, but I've seen the green one. And, you know, it just like takes me aback and I just stop and then I watch it as it drives by. And I just think it's the coolest thing because I can imagine there's a party going on inside. And it's just so nice to be with everybody. And it's got to be a fun way to go. Really fun.
Well, if you like the green one, you'll definitely like the white one because it's an older style looking trolley, and the interiors on them have not been upgraded. It's the same wooden seats that are facing forward with the brass handles that the old trolleys had, and it's nice because they're a fraction of the cost of a new bus, and it serves the same purpose.
Yes. And what about the buses? You've also got buses?
Yes, we do have limo buses, not coaches. Coaches are the typical facing forward seats, which are, you know, called coach. And then they have a classification called limo buses, which is basically a limousine interior. It's got sofa-type seating, couch seating along the windows, and everybody faces each other. And you can get up and walk around, where a coach, everybody has to stand, you know, and sit in their seat. It's hard to walk around. You just have like an aisle. So on our bus, you can get up and you can dance. There's like a wooden dance floor along the length of the bus with strobe lights, mirrored ceilings, a state-of-the-art sound system in there with a flat screen. I think it's a 48-inch LCD TV in the back.
That's really beautiful.
That's hot for Palms.
Uh-huh. I've never been in a party bus like that. I've never seen the interior.
I'm going to pick you
beautiful.
Up after the show. I'm going to surprise you.
Well, that's really cool. Well, before you go, and I appreciate you making all this time for us, I was wondering, is there anything specific that I didn't ask? Because, you know, I'm not the smartest dude in the room, so maybe there's something I forgot to ask you that I should have.
What do you mean you're not the smartest? I thought you were the smartest.
No. You got me confused with somebody else.
You covered pretty the bases. basically what I want to ask you is I want to thank you. I want to thank you. I want to thank your website, Yonkers Tribune. I think you provide Yonkers with a valuable service. I think God bless you for your reporting. God bless you for keeping us in the loop. Because even a guy like me that thinks no at all, I go on your website and I say, wow, I didn't know this. You know, every day, every other day, there's a new story breaking, and it's really great that you keep, you know, all the guys that are not in the loop, in the loop. And I just wanted to thank you on that because I don't think so people recognize it for what it is.
Well, I appreciate that. And I want to thank you just for doing everything you've done. And thank you so, so much for the time. It really matters a great deal.
My pleasure,
and I hope
my
we're going to do this again at the height, you know what, maybe we should do this before the height of the wedding season is over. And maybe you can share some laughs about situations that occurred, because I think that's got to be the funny. You need to write a book, because I'm sure what you've learned in your business is at least two volumes.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. A few other people said the same thing. Yeah, there's a lot of stories.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, John Cater, Top Class Limousine. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Be well. Enjoy the day.
Take care.
Well, there we have it, folks. John Cater, Top Class Limousine. And you could find him at topclasslimo.com. And, you know, I guess, and if you want to call, because some people like to call, the number there is 914-423-5466. And we have a caller, so let's find out who that is. Good morning, caller. How are you?
Yes, good morning, Hezzy. It's Peter Iwanowitz with Environmental Advocates of New York up here in Albany.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
Well, it's great to hear from you. I'm so pleased that you've taken the time to speak to us. You had an issue that you brought up yesterday that we were thankfully became aware of from your office. And I was wondering if you could touch and give us a synopsis of why you were drawn to write an op-ed piece, or rather make a statement.
Yeah, well, yesterday the State Public Authorities Control Board, which is an august-sounding body that's comprised of three leaders, the governor's office, the leaders of the Senate, and the leaders of the Assembly, got together, and unfortunately they rubber-stamped a request by the governor to dip into what we call a raid of clean water funds so that the governor has up to now $500 million more to be dedicating towards the construction of the Tappan Zee Bridge construction project. So what they really did is they sort of approved part one of the raid that the governor wants to have to take money away from cleaning up New York City sewage treatment plants and sewage infrastructure and instead use those precious dollars for the construction of his Tappan Zee Bridge.
Mm. Well, I know, I remember that's the reason I was taken aback by it. I couldn't really understand why he should need this money for the Tappan Zee Bridge, especially when we are coming off a penalty fee that was imposed by the U.S. government against BNP Paribas Bank. They were fined $9 billion for skirting a U.S. law, which meant basically that they were trading with Iran and with Sudan and with Cuba, and that was not permitted by our law. So if a bank wanted to engage in business with the U.S., they had to abide by our laws. The bank did not. That $8.9 billion is going to translate to the New York State coffers somewhere between $2.2 billion to about $3 billion in the state coffers, and that money is going to arrive by the end of July or the first day in August. So why was there such a rush to get funding taken away from something that's so necessary? I know that the water treatment plant in Yonkers, for example, has never functioned fully well. It reeks in the summer months. It could drive you crazy.
Yeah, well, then that's the problem. I mean, in New York State, his agency, the governor's agency, the Department of Environmental Conservation, which oversees and permits wastewater treatment facilities like the one in Yonkers and elsewhere, they identified that there's more than $35 billion worth of sewage infrastructure projects across New York State that are going to be needed to be completed in the next 20 years. That's an enormous bill. So the last thing we should be doing in 2014 is taking $500 million out of a pot of money that exists today to upgrade sewage wastewater treatment plants and dedicating it towards bridge construction. So, you know, there are enormous amounts of head-scratching going on. Folks from both sides of the aisle, past administration officials stopped me in the street just this morning wondering what is going on, how can this possibly happen, and what level of due diligence has been taken to look at this transfer of money from sewage treatment off to build the bridge. And I have to tell them honestly, I don't know. We've actually joined together with 11 other groups to ask for an independent investigation of the State Environmental Facilities Corporation, the body that first approved the governor's loan at the end of June, to see what independent due diligence they did on the whole deal and what that might mean to future things. We think there are enormous gaps, and they're not supposed to act on the whim of a governor or a request of the governor. They're supposed to be independent board members to represent the interests of that agency, not necessarily the interests of the governor.
Well, that seems to be a concept that was forgotten many, many years ago, not specific to this governor, but specific to so many different bodies of government or governance across the nation and the state. Well, we should tell people that you are the executive director of Environmental Advocates of New York. Your name is Peter Ivanovich. How do you respond to people who say, yeah, but we need to build the bridge? And since we always knew that we needed to fix the bridge or replace the bridge or do something to that effect, why haven't we created a planning process in order to be able to meet the challenges that are before us? It's not like we're going to be surprised next year that we need to do certain things and we may not have the funding for it. Is there little planning that's going on in governance today?
Well, it seems that way. I mean, we're building a bridge and we don't have a plan, you know, in place to finance its construction. Let's just say, hypothetically, the governor is allowed to go forward with this raid. The federal government doesn't come in and say, no. We have a $1.6 billion loan from the federal DOT. It's a loan. We got to repay it. He wants to raid the clean water funds for another $500 million. So let's do my math, $2.1 billion. The bridge is going to cost $4 billion. There's still almost a $2 billion gap between what we need and what we would have if the raid was successful. There's no plan in place, and there's no financial sort of document that shows you, me, anybody in the public. The Public Authorities Control Board yesterday admitted it. Everybody will admit it up and down. There's no plan. We don't know how we're going to, you know, pay for the construction, yet we're in the midst of the construction. And, yes, we totally agree we need a bridge. It would have been much better if the bridge also featured mass transit, by the way, to help people in the congested traffic areas. You know, and I will drive over the Tappan Zee Bridge later tonight in my drive from upstate down to the east end of Long Island. So, yes, we need this. But what we don't need is a secretive process that's not honest with the public about how we're going to pay for it. And I think if you went to the public and said, would you rather have more sewage being dumped by their Yonkers wastewater treatment facility into the Hudson or the bridge, I think they wouldn't take that choice. They'd say, I want clean water and I want a bridge.
That's so true. Well, you know, it's funny. There are so many instances in Yonkers where pipes have failed and sewage gets dumped right into the Hudson after we're spending so much money to clean it up. And then runoff water. We're a very hilly city. We're, I think, the second most hilly city in the nation after San Francisco. We have tremendous problems with runoff. And when rains come down heavily, 2-3 inches in an hour, the bottom line is it runs right over the water treatment plant and gets dumped right into the river. So we don't have effective means to maintain our investment in a better way or in the most prudent way.
And I don't understand what's happening in governance, because there isn't as much thinking as one would have hoped. In Yonkers, we call it the no plan plan, and we got the best. I'm not sure if that's defined as ineptitude or not, but we just have a no plan plan, and it's been functioning here for many years. So I guess the state is catching up to us. It's always nice to be in the forefront. So is there an alternative? What should the state consider doing now? Should the state legislature come back and reconvene? They're in recess right now and discuss this issue, because nobody seems to have an answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'll have the answer, but I think you touched on it earlier. New York State is going to be the beneficiaries of an enforcement action taken jointly by New York officials and federal government against this bank in France. And it's going to have a multi-billion dollar windfall coming to it. And clearly, there should be a robust discussion that involves elected officials through the legislature to oversee their, and participate in their constitutional obligation of appropriating those funds. Going to go into the state general's fund. It would be a discussion that by the Constitution, the legislature has to have a role in shaping what to do with that. And part of that should be how much of this goes towards lasting infrastructure that we'll have around for decades versus one-shot deals that we may lose and worry about financing later. And it may make sense that this money goes towards the construction of the Tappan Zee Bridge. It may make sense that it should go towards making sure that we have the basis for a strong five-year capital plan for overall transportation to cut down the amount of traffic conditions we have right now. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could make sense, but one thing's important is
that
discussion,
should
happen with the legislature. Yeah, it shouldn't happen in a vacuum or be secret or private.
Well, that's so interesting, because only a few days ago, Assemblyman Thomas Avenanti, he suggested that the $3 billion be split for three different purposes, one of which was to invest $1 billion in the bridge, so we would get closer to the costs of building. But then what's so interesting, too, is that it's as if the money needs to be there right now for the bridge, as if we were going to expend all the money today. And yet this could be a process that could be thought out and built over, 3 years or so, because it's not going to be built by the end of 2015. We still haven't done anything. So
right.
I don't even know when they're going to finish building. But everyone's got their hand out, New York City is getting a piece of this money. The MTA is getting a piece of this money. But the governor figured it all out. But when the budget was approved on the 30th of April, he made sure that the money that comes to the state would all come to Albany first, and he would dispense it.
Yeah. Yep.
And none of the delegation was evidently aware of this, or maybe they were just simply mum or ignorant. I don't know. I don't know how they did that. So what do we have to look forward to? Is the fight really just to continue in the hope that they will get some sense about it? Or is this a done deal?
Well, no, it's certainly not a done deal. In our Constitution has checks and balances. We had one check yesterday that failed us all. The legislature really should have checked the governor's power and desire to raid these funds yesterday. And quite honestly, The legislature failed to that task yesterday. This body, the Public Authorities Control Board, should have exercised veto power and stopped it. They didn't. So what's the next checks and balance from your early civics lessons? It's the courts. Unfortunately, this thing will be litigated. We will have to contemplate and probably bring a lawsuit to have the judicial review of these decisions. As I mentioned earlier, we were also asking the authorities' budget office to examine the independent due diligence of the board members of the State Environmental Facilities Corp who blessed the governor's request for a loan to be made. So we're going to be asking them about the terms and deal and how much individual scrutiny they ask. And I think us and some of our partners here will contemplate filing and litigating the issue to get the courts to look at it. I mean, that's one of the checks and balances in our democracy, and unfortunately on this instance it looks like we're going to have to avail ourselves of judicial relief.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, Mr. Ivanovich, because it seems that every case where there's a lack of prudence, I guess, in reaching a conclusion and seemingly in silence as opposed to in public, through public discourse, that it does lead to litigation. But only those that people that litigate might see the light of day. I hope that you'd consider keeping us informed in the process, because it might be a civic lesson that people can see and see the process should you make the final decision to go through with some sort of litigious action. Because they're just, I don't know about you, but I've been around 14 years covering politics, and I'm constantly disappointed by our representatives, because they claim to be our front line of defense, but quite often they capitulate to powers greater than they. And yeah. I don't always know if they're doing it for the public interest.
It isn't always that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, you make some great points.
Well, does the Environmental Advocates of New York, do you feel that you're making an impact? You certainly make an impact with me, because I appreciate openness. I think whatever you can discuss in a back room, you should be able to discuss before the people, because they're paying for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
from what
our
we've seen with this issue? Yeah, what we've seen with this issue, just to answer your question, are we making an impact? Well, I mean, you know, the stand-up vote, they had asked for $500 million yesterday from the Public Authorities Control Board, and they said, well, we're skeptical about the whole thing. We'll only give you half now. I mean, they will come back and ask for the second half later. So I don't think it's a victory at all, but it certainly was an impact that we at least required some diligence and some scrutiny of the deal that was dissimilar to the authority, the Environmental Facilities Corp vote back in June. So at least there was some additional scrutiny given to the deal. We've also seen editorial pages from newspapers across New York State, the Buffalo News, on the Canadian Board, the Watertown Daily Times. Heck, even the New York Post and the New York Times agreed with our position that this was a raid. The New York Post called it 2 days ago dubious. The New York Times hit them pretty heavily in June. How often do we see in politics and public discourse the editorial page of the New York Post and the New York Times coming up with the same conclusion that this thing stinks? That's what we've been able to do.
Absolutely.
Is sort of educate people to the nature of the deal.
Well, you know, the truth is, if it wasn't for your statement, there wouldn't be any editorial. The fact that you stand up there and you show the rationale behind your statement and how inappropriate it is when there's so many other concerns that are in our face, and the lack of planning brought this about. You know, I've always seen that it takes only one person to say something. If it's lucid, it resonates. Evidently, you've done that. So I've got to be thankful for that. Is there still a disconnect between people and the environmental safety that you propose as like an underlying factor to move forward?
Well, I think there's still this undercurrent that strong environmental standards that are designed to not only protect the environment but safeguard our health are somehow contradictory to economic growth. You know, the business community often trots out the line that these regulations are burdensome, or they will kill job growth. I mean, that rhetoric should have been dismissed a long time ago, and I think governors on the Democratic side and the Republican side in New York in particular have sort of embraced environmental values and environmental protection, knowing full well that a strong, vibrant environment and a healthy place to work and live is a great place to do business in and grow economically. Mm-hmm. But I still think that there's this constant drumbeat that denies the fact that climate change is happening, that views environmental standards and environmental agencies as people who are inherently against economic growth and competition and competitive enterprise. And unfortunately, that sort of still probably pervades for about 20% mm-hmm. of the general public here in New York, and more so in other states, but I would say that's probably the case.
Mm. Very fascinating, I guess, the way people respond to different stimulus of news and information, and how people, I don't know, I guess they they submit to talking points and don't always go beyond that. It's a hard thing to do. I know from the media perspective, it's hard at times to run the gauntlet between concepts that are being promoted. It's more like spin rather than anything else. And you know, the subtlety and the nuance of science and fact and safety. And so I find that difficult at times to appreciate. And, yeah. And the political machine just doesn't help it somehow. And I don't know why that is. Just interesting.
Yeah, so just a couple of last thoughts before I have to run here. But
sure.
I mean, I think the couple of pieces that I've seen, and I've worked in the governor's office under Spitzer and Patterson. I was working as DEC commissioner in my time in government in between 2007 and 2010 when I was inside. And, you know, for the last 3 years, I spent time in Washington, D.C. before leading environmental advocates starting in the fall of 2013. What I found is both political parties really sort of, you know, really try to stimulate the base. You know, in the sense of the anti-environmental movement, you would see in the face of facts to the contrary, we saw the coal industry nationally argue that the Clean Air Act is killing jobs. Just the facts alone sort of dispel that, right? You have tremendous reduction in air pollution, like a 70 to 75% reduction in air pollution. We still have a long way to go in this country, but air is a heck of a lot cleaner here in New York and elsewhere in this country as a result of the Clean Air Act. Meanwhile, in the same 40 years, almost 45-year timeline, economic growth in this country has gone up 200+%. But still, that resonating, well, the Clean Air Act kills jobs mentality still pervades, because they understand that there's about 20% of the general public, their demographic sort of focus area being white Republican males in the heartland of the country, that they want to stimulate with this message to get them engaged and come out to vote on their position. It backfired for Mitt Romney in key districts in Ohio. The general public just didn't buy into it, and it drove moderate voters away from him. So their base stimulation messaging in Ohio that Obama had a war on coal backfired. But you know what? They didn't learn the lesson. They're back with the same rhetoric now against Obama's carbon pollution standards for power plants. So it's unfortunate, but that's sort of what happens. People get entrenched in their position to stimulate a base, and they lose the larger sight of what this means to protecting public health and the environment for all residents of the country.
Yeah, that's really important, too, because it is for all. And I still don't I appreciate what they're doing or what they're attempting to do, but in the process they're hurting. They may be invigorating the base, or whichever base that is, but they're also hurting the general population in the long haul.
Yeah. People lose sight of their role in being, you know, a participant in governance versus just the electoral politics. And the electoral politics really takes over and is preventing them from being a participant in governance.
That's really the base. That's the baseline of it all. And I think you've hit on it right in the head. That's what's happening. And we no longer have discussion.
No.
You know, so it's fascinating. Yeah. Well, I hope you'll be back.
Definitely. Thank you for having me this morning. Thank you for your interest and your kind words about our role in sort of sound the alarm. But as somebody that spent time in the governor's office and understands the relationship between the executive branch and these independent authorities, I'm really taken aback at how much good policy and good government has really been thrown out the window with this deal.
It has. It's interesting. I think I've been watching it for the last 5 years. It's been really, we're going in the wrong direction. So fascinating. Well, Mr. Ivanovich, a pleasure. Thank you so much, and be well. Thank you for making the time for us.
I appreciate it.
Be well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye. Well, there we have it. Executive Director Peter Ivanovich. He is the executive director of Environmental Advocates of New York. And it's just interesting, again, the perspective that he spoke to is going to probably demand, and he's the one that mentioned it, probably demand litigious action in order to review the basis for the agreement to
give funding, you know, for the bridge, and you know, and it's taking away from environmental needs as well. So how does that make sense? And also the fact that when you look at rating the environmental needs, or rating the coffers of environmental needs, when you have an inflow that was never planned for 2 years ago or a year ago, in the last 6 months or so, everyone was aware of this issue with the Banque Nationale de Paribas, and here the state is going to earn this windfall of about $3 billion. We have to decide what to do with that funding. I don't know. It puts into question whether MTA even should be on the line. Look at all the stuff that New York City's gotten. Is there a better way of trying to use the money in a rational way and bolster the needs of so many different aspects of infrastructure that is falling apart? We haven't made the investments. And, you know, we just need to make it. Otherwise, we won't be competitive on any plane, which is fascinating. Well, let's take a quick break, find out what's going on from our advertisers. Well, I guess we could find out about the Yonkers Tribune, and we'll be right back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the Internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Well, let's go back and find out what's happening on the international stage. This is Westchester on the Level. With Narog and Aris, co-host Richard Narog is always here on Tuesdays, and I'm on the rest of the week. So we're going to need to find out what's happening, particularly after the agreement last night for a five-hour ceasefire. Well, it seems that mortars are fired from Gaza into Israel amid the ceasefire. So three mortars struck southern Israel near the border with the Gaza Strip today. The Israeli military said so. And just hours after a five-hour humanitarian ceasefire took effect, Hamas denied any involvement in the attack. Now, the mortars landed in open areas, causing no injuries or damage, the military said, and there were no reports of Israeli retaliation. Hamas denied responsibility for the attack. Quote, whenever the Palestinian factions say that we are not going to do anything, they don't, said Ihab Hussein, the media office chief for the former Hamas government in Gaza. Israel's military had earlier said it would suspend operations against Gaza from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Local time. That's from 7 a.m. to 12 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So I guess from here in the United States, it would be from 12 noon to about 5 p.m. For humanitarian reasons, Hamas, the Islamist movement that controls much of the Gaza Strip, had agreed to follow suit. Now, in the hours leading up to the ceasefire, Israel continued to strike at positions within Gaza, while the military said that militants fired 82 rockets across the border, 30 of which were intercepted by Israel's missile defense system called the Iron Dome. Now, Israel first launched its operations against Gaza on July 8 in an effort to halt rocket attacks coming out of the Palestinian enclave. At least 220 people have been killed by Israeli attacks since the conflict began, according to Palestinian health officials, while another 1,670 have been wounded. One Israeli has been killed by rocket fire from Gaza.
On Wednesday, correspondent Gallagher Fenwick, he actually, one second, whoops, oh my goodness, one split second, well, we're going to have to, okay, sorry about that. He is a France Van Katz Gaza correspondent, and along with other several journalists, he witnessed an Israeli airstrike hit a beach. And one second here, just see how this thing goes. Okay, one more second. Sorry, there are too many contraptions on this thing. Okay, we're going to get to that later. Caller called, and I can't take the calls in the meantime. So it turns out that Gallagher Fenwick, along with other journalists, witnessed an Israeli airstrike that hit a beach off a coastal road west of Gaza City, killing four Palestinian children as they played together along the beach. Now, in a firsthand account of the deadly strike, Fenwick said, quote, "A first shelling struck right in front of our eyes, hitting a structure on the pier close to the hotels where a majority of the international media is based. The four boys, Ahed Atef Bakir and Zaharia Ahed Bakir, both aged 10, Mohammed Ramez Bakir, who was 9, and Ismail Mohammed Bakir were all cousins," said Ashraf Al-Khudra, a Palestinian doctor. Now, seven others, adults and children, were also said to have been wounded in the strikes. The Israeli military said the reported civilian casualties were unintended and, quote, tragic, end quote, and it was investigating what happened. Based on preliminary results, the target of this strike was Hamas terrorist operatives, it said in a statement. The four bodies of the children were later taken to Abu Hasira Mosque, near where the boys had died. The boys were laid out, wrapped in the yellow flags of the Fatah Party, the Palestinian rival to the Hamas movement, in front of mourners. And that was the tragedy. Unbelievable. Four children, all related. It's just too much. Okay. Now, let's see what else is happening in the area, basically. We're going to go to Syria. Jihadists have seized Syria's gas field near Palmyra. Jihadists on Thursday seized a gas field in the desert region of Palmyra in central Syria, a monitoring group and the governor of Homs said. Now, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, Islamic State fighters on Thursday, that's today, this morning, attacked the Sha'al gas field east of the ancient city of Palmyra, killing 23 guards. Quote, "The fate of 340 National Defense Force, which is a paramilitary membership, guards, engineers, and employees who were in the field is unknown, as they were either taken prisoner, wounded, or captured during the operation," said Observatory Director Rami Abdelrahman. Now, the operation, he added, was the Islamic State's most important so far against the government of Syria's President Bashar al-Assad. Abu Bilal, an activist linked to the Islamic State in Homs, in the Homs province, also reported the attack. 12 members of the Islamic State had been slain in the fighting, he said, adding that dozens, quote, dozens were killed on the government side. Quote, "There was a martyrdom," meaning a suicide attack, "and we took 8 checkpoints before taking over the gas field," Abu Bilal said via the internet. Homs Governor Talal Barazi also confirmed the attack. Armed men took control on Wednesday evening of the gas field. Oh my God, we're going to find out there's an airplane crash. We'll find out in a moment what it is. Armed men took control on Wednesday evening of the gas field, and we have lost contact with 3 technicians who were on the site, Barazi told Agence France-Presse. Now, the armed men were present in the area beforehand, but they have now expanded their area of control with this operation, he said. The army is trying to take it back. There's fighting in the area and government airstrikes. The Islamic State, which proclaimed a caliphate, which means state, straddling Syria, and Iraq last month has in recent weeks taken over the entire countryside of the oil-rich Deir ez-Zor province. Deir ez-Zor borders Homs province, as well as Iraq, where the jihadist group has spearheaded a major Sunni military offensive that has seen large swathes of territory fall out of the Iraqi government control. Unbelievable, as they say, and just amazing. Now, let's just see what else is going on here. This is interesting on a completely different realm. An Italian director is going to shoot the first film about Pope Francis. An Italian director, best known for telling complex on-screen love stories, will begin shooting the first film about Pope Francis in Argentina later this year, Italian radio reported today. Daniel Lucchetti said he would start filming the biopic in October after he had become fascinated by the pontiff's openness on various issues. Quote, he says, "I want to tell the story of Francis before he became pope," Lucchetti told Italy's RAI2, that's Radio RAI. I forgot. You know, I'm getting them confused. No, this is a different. It's a radio station. That's why I'm forgetting it, because there's another RIA is Radio Radio Italia, and so. But no, that's not a TV station. I forgot what they call it. Is it Rediffusion or something like that? Anyway, the bottom line is Italian radio, public radio. So asked which actor would play the Pope, Lucchetti mentioned Argentine star Rodrigo de la Serna, who played Che Guevara's friend in the biopic The Motorcycle Diaries. Interesting. The director's most famous for his film, My Brother is an Only Child, a story of two working-class brothers growing up in the 1960s that was shown at the 2007 Cannes Film Festival. His short film, Portabors, The Bag Carrier, was about political corruption in Italy, and the 57-year-old said he also plans to make a television series about the Pope. Very interesting. Well, anything about the Pope is really exciting and interesting. Let me see. Well, there's a problem internationally with regard to coal stocks. I've run dangerously low at an India power station. Nearly half of India's coal-fired power stations only have enough stock to last a week as the country struggles to meet growing seasonal demand for electricity, the power ministry said Thursday. Piyush Goyal told Parliament that demand for power had outstripped supply nationally during the peak summer months between April and June. Some 46 of 100 coal-fired plants were left with stocks for less than 7 days, and measures were being taken to avert a crisis, he said. Separately, the country's largest power producer, state-run NTPC, warned that six of its plants have stocks for up to just 2 days of output, and it cannot weather even a small disruption in supplies. NTPC warned of the problem at the plants, which accounts for 15% of India's total energy capacity, in a letter to the power ministry on July 14, according to the Press Trust of India, PTI news agency. Now, with the ensuing monsoons, it will become more difficult to replenish the coal stock. In case of even a small disruption, the total power generation at these stations will be adversely affected, said NTPC chairman and managing director Arup Roy Choudhury, I think is the way he pronounced his name, wrote in a letter. So interesting that they waited almost to the last second to advise this, but we'll probably find out later that, what can I tell you, that it's just not going to happen. And I don't know if they'll be able to replenish this. Now, this is really interesting. The European football's governing body, the UEFA, announced today that no Champion League or Europa League matches could be played in Israel until further notice for security reasons. The UEFA emergency panel met on July 16 and decided that due to the current security situation in Israel, no UEFA competition matches may be played in the country until further notice, read a statement issued by UEFA, and consequently the Israeli clubs involved in forthcoming fixtures have been requested to propose alternative venues outside of Israel's territory for their home legs in the 2014-2015 UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League. That's going to put Maccabi Tel Aviv in a very, very difficult situation. Very interesting. Let's see what else is happening over in South Africa, going a little bit further away. It seems that South Africa is hiking rates and lowers a growth forecast. South Africa's Reserve Bank raised its key interest rate on Thursday and slashed its 2014 growth forecast further, owing to industrial strikes and high inflation. Central Bank raised its repo rate by 25 basis points to 5.75% and said economic growth was now expected to slow to 1.7%. It remains concerned about weak growth, widening output gap, and the negative unemployment outlook, said Bank Chief Gil Marcus. That's a woman. Gil Marcus, maybe her name is Jill, but G-I-L-L is the way she spells her name, amid a 25.2% unemployment rate. My God, the bank faces an increasingly difficult dilemma of rising inflation and slowing growth, she said. A weak currency and rising food prices further complicated the rate change decision. The inflation rate worsened since the bank's last meeting in May, measured at 6.6% 2 months ago. The rate is expected to stay above the 6.0% target until next year. Interesting. Now, let's see what else is happening on the grand scheme of things. We're going to get to that story as well with the airplane. We're just waiting for the final. Let me just see here one more second. Let's find out what's happening on the international front as far as business is concerned. The Airbus has enjoyed the best ever foreign borrow show in terms of orders, the head of the European plane maker said on Thursday, helping it close the gap on U.S. rival Boeing. Airbus said it had won commitments and firm orders for 496 planes worth over $75 billion at the key industry sales event that alternates annually with the Paris Air Show. Now, Boeing said it had clinched deals for 201 aircraft worth more than $40 billion. This is the best foreign-borrow air show in Airbus history, and this is the third biggest if we include the Paris Air Show. Chief Executive Fabrice Brégère told a press conference at the event near London, which opens the doors to the public over the weekend for flypasts. Now, the latest deals confirmed Thursday saw a leasing company, Hong Kong Aviation Capital, sign a firm order for 70 single-aisle A320neo passenger planes from Airbus. The fuel-efficient jets are valued at $7.72 billion at list price, but customers tend to receive significant discounts on such purchases. And so it goes on and on. What's interesting is Transaero, Russia's second biggest airline, meanwhile said it committed to buy 20 A330 aircraft, including a dozen new fuel-efficient NEOs worth $5.3 billion. So very, very interesting here. So Airbus has dominated the start of the week-long foreign borrow event, securing a host of commitments for its new long-haul A330neo passenger planes from air leasing companies and the airline Air Asia X, but no firm orders. So, and Boeing's, interestingly enough, ramping up $40.2 billion in sales. Just fascinating. Okay. This is really also very interesting with regard to Microsoft. Microsoft is going to cut up to 18,000 jobs over the next year. Microsoft will cut up to 18,000 jobs, about 14% of its staff, over the next year as it integrates its recently purchased Nokia mobile unit and reduces levels of management. CEO Satya Nadella said in an email to staff made public today. Some 12,500 professional and factory jobs are expected to be cut in the company's the company's biggest round of layoffs in its 39-year-long history. It's the boldest move yet by CEO Satya Nadella since he took the reins from Steve Ballmer in February. We will simplify the way we work to drive greater accountability, become more agile, and move faster, Nadella wrote to employees in a memo made public today. He said, we plan to have fewer layers of management, both top-down and sideways, to accelerate the flow of information and decision-making. Microsoft expects charges of $1.1 billion to $1.6 billion over the next four quarters, which includes $750 million to $800 million for severance benefits and related costs. Microsoft has been shifting its focus from traditional PC software to cloud computing and cloud-based products like its Office 365 productivity software. In a blog posting a week ago, Nadella hinted at the move, saying Microsoft had to change and evolve its culture for the, quote, mobile-first and cloud-first world. Nadella said Thursday he would give more details when Redmond-based Microsoft reports its fiscal 2014 results next Tuesday. So the bold cuts were welcomed by Wall Street, who viewed Microsoft as bloated under previous CEO Ballmer. The company topped 127,000 employees after absorbing the Nokia mobile devices division in April. So shares of Microsoft rose $1.35 or 3.1% to $45.43 in pre-market trading on the news, and the stock is up nearly 18% since the beginning of the year. So evidently a lot of people must have thought that this was going to come about. Very, very interesting. Well, I see that it's just about a quarter to the hour. Let's find out what's happening at the Westchester Broadway Theater with regard to Mary Poppins, and we'll be back.
The Westchester Broadway Theater's always been a great night out for the whole family, and now it's gotten even better with the new WBT Family Pack, the most affordable way ever to enjoy our hit production of Mary Poppins through July 27th and our next great production of The Wizard of Oz, July 31st through September 21st. For each of these shows, two adults and two children, 17 and under, can save $48 off the regular ticket price. That's $48. Not to mention other money-saving offers like unlimited soda for the kids and special savings on luxury desserts, appetizers, and gift shop items. And with weekend matinees and a new enhanced children's menu, there's never been a better time to introduce your kids to all the wonder and magic of live theater. Order online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Treat your family to a great family night out and save $48 to boot. The WBT Family Pack for Mary Poppins now through July 27th and The Wizard of Oz July 31st through September 21st. Only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Here we go again. Latest report is that the world is getting warmer, so says a global climate report. I'm not sure what's going on. All I know is that the weather seems to be different now than it was 20 years ago. The world is getting warmer as greenhouse gases reach historic highs and Arctic sea ice melts, which is evident, and making 2013 one of the hottest years on record, international scientists said today. Now, the annual State of the Climate Report 2013 is a review of scientific data and weather events over the past year compiled by 425 scientists from 57 countries. These findings reinforce what scientists for decades have observed, that our planet is becoming a warmer place, said National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Administrator Catherine Sullivan. Global temperatures were among the warmest on record worldwide, with four major data sets showing 2013 ranked between second and sixth for all-time heat. Australia observed its warmest year on record, while Argentina had its second warmest and New Zealand its third warmest, said the report. Sea surface temperature also rose, making last year among the 10 warmest on record. The Arctic marked its seventh warmest year since records began in the early 1990s. Arctic sea ice was the sixth lowest since satellite observations began in 1979. On average, global sea levels also rose, keeping pace with a trend of adding about 3 millimeters per year over the past two decades, it said. Methane, carbon dioxide, and other greenhouse gases that come from burning fossil fuels continued to rise during 2013, once again reaching historic high values, said the report. For the first time, the daily concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere exceeded 400 parts per million,
as measured by the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii, a year after observational sites in the Arctic observed carbon dioxide at 400 parts per million in the spring of 2012. So the report published in the peer-reviewed Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society offers a detailed scientific snapshot of what's happening in our world, said the group's executive director, Keith Seifer. So very, very interesting to say the least. I don't know, that's another issue that became politicized. If it ever had a right to be, I don't know. I can't judge because I don't understand the scientific aspects of it all, but I do notice that in the pictures that we see, assuming the pictures are not lies, the ice is getting thinner in the Arctic. They've been predicting this for a while, and the predictions of countries and the fight for control of waterways that have been shut because of ice for years is going to make it an unbelievable trading route. Can you imagine being able to trade north of Russia, north of Scandinavia, and you know, certainly able to go through the Canadian passages? This would be mind-boggling, just mind-boggling. And to be able to go from, let's say, from Russia to China over the North Atlantic, over the Arctic Circle, would be fascinating, and the costs would be just amazingly cheap in comparison. So very, very interesting to say the least. Now, let's just see what else is going on. I'm trying to track down. I thought I saw a notice that there was a problem with an airplane that went down. It was a Malaysian plane, and maybe it has to do with the Malaysian plane that everyone thought landed off in the Indian Ocean or off of Australia, and it seems that this plane had gone down, of all places, in Ukraine, which was at one time thought to be a possibility. Now, let's just see if we can find this. Let me bear with me a moment. Have to look through this. I'm going to search this one out because it's such important news. Bear with me a moment. It's important, of course, that God forbid we've lost people. But what's more interesting, and well, I don't want to deny that, but of course it would be fascinating if there had anything to do with, I think, was it MH370, the one that had gotten lost, was supposed to go from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing? Yes, here it is. Let's see, here it is. A Malaysian airline, reportedly with 295 people on board, crashes in Ukraine near the border with Russia on a flight from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. Interesting. So this had nothing to do with the other situation, but definitely, you know, just fascinating. Now, this is outrageous, and this continues, but interestingly enough, the world looks at India for direction when it comes to violence. India, a six-year-old was raped in Bangalore in a school by staff members. I mean, do you believe the insanity? What's going on in this world? A six-year-old schoolgirl has allegedly been raped by two staff members at a prominent school in the southern Indian city of Bangalore, police say. The alleged assault happened on the 2nd of July, but her parents discovered it only a few days ago after she complained of stomach ache and was taken to hospital. Meanwhile, hundreds of parents have protested outside the school, pulling down its gates and shouting slogans. And police have registered the case, but they are not yet making any arrests. Now, the BBC's Andrew North in Delhi says it's the latest in a series of sexual assault cases that have made headlines in India. And figures show more rapes are being reported in general, which is a sign that the crime is being taken more seriously, our correspondent reports. But India's sluggish judicial system means it may take years for victims to get justice. New Prime Minister Narendra Modi
has promised a zero-tolerance approach on crimes against women, but violence and discrimination against women remain deeply entrenched in society. Well, I guess we can't say we're that far removed from it here in the United States. So the girl was allegedly raped by a security guard and a gym teacher, but as there are multiple guards and gym instructors in the school, police say they are trying to identify the guilty. And BBC's Hindi's Imran Qureshi reports from Bangalore, as news of the incident became public, hundreds of parents gathered outside the school protesting against the alleged insensitivity of the school management. You know, this can just wipe you out. It's just amazing. And we need to discuss this much more sternly here in the United States. It's just not good that we're not. Okay, let's see what's happening further on the local scene. And just bear with me a moment. Of course, you know that the U.S. and the European Union are boosting sanctions on Russia. We've learned about Microsoft axing about 18,000 jobs. And this is interesting when it comes to cannabis. It seems that Washington, D.C.'s marijuana decriminalization law is taking effect. Washington has ended criminal penalties for possession of small amounts of cannabis, giving the U.S. Capitol one of the most liberal marijuana laws in America. Beginning today, people caught with less than 1 ounce, that's 28 grams, will be assessed a $25 civil violation akin to a ticket for littering. Now, it remains a crime punishable with jail to sell cannabis or smoke it in public. The new law was intended to ease racial disparities in marijuana arrests. When they passed the law in the spring, Washington, D.C. city councilors noted that surveys show white and black people smoke marijuana at roughly the same rate, but in Washington, D.C., black people were far more likely to be arrested and jailed for marijuana possession. Washington, D.C. is not a state, and under the terms of the city's charter, its laws are subject to review by Congress. At midnight on Thursday, the mandatory 60-day review period expired without Congress taking action, allowing the discrimination ordinance to take effect, and formally possession of less than an ounce of marijuana was punishable for up to 6 months in jail and a fine of $1,000. Washington, D.C. joins 9 states in which possession of marijuana is treated as a civil, non-criminal offense, according to the Normie, a marijuana reform group. If the five other states, marijuana, in the five other states, marijuana possession is a misdemeanor, punishable only by a fine. Alaska imposes no penalty at all for small amounts of marijuana, and the drug is legal in Washington State and Colorado. Well, changing, everything's changing, and we'll see where that leads. Okay, bear with me 1 second. Oh, it does seem that Russian shares have fallen on with respect to the sanctions that were being imposed. Okay, well, it does look, unfortunately, that we've come to the end of our second hour. And we have to say goodbye. Hope you enjoy the weekend. And we hope to see you on or listen to you and hear from you on Monday when John Bailey, the publisher, the editor of White Plains Citizenette Report and reporter and I will join in the discussion. And then, of course, we'll try to catch up in the second hour with international news to keep us abreast of what's happening. So I want to wish you a great weekend. I want to thank Mr. Ivanovich with regard to his giving us a call today because it was important to hear his perspective with regard to taking money out of the out of funding that was set aside for environmental issues, particularly with keeping our waters clean and safe. So Mr. Peter Ivanovich from the Environmental Advocates of New York, want to thank him. And we want to, of course, also thank John Cater, the president, the owner of Top Class Limousine, and
you know, they're based in Yonkers, so topclasslimo.com, and you'll be able to find them. And I guess that's it. So we'll speak to you on Monday. Be safe and enjoy the weather, enjoy your friends, enjoy your family, and we'll speak to you Monday. Take care. Bye.